Attention builders, August 19th, Matt Reisinger and I are teaming up to bring you a proven framework that's guaranteed to focus your energy as an entrepreneur and save you hours of time every single week. Matt knows better than anyone how important it is to push out urgent interruptions and really just focus on what matters. Not sure how many of you know this, but he had to muddle through years of chaos, being pulled in every direction, everybody needing his time, and there just was never enough of it to go around. So on August 19th, I'm going to ask Matt to pull back the curtain on all of this in this very special webinar on priority management. We're going to be getting into some real life stories about times we've both missed the mark and spent months focused on the wrong thing and probably will never get that time back. But most importantly, what we actually did to shift this. So in this web class, our whole goal is to give you the tools that you need to avoid making the exact same mistakes. If you're ready to block distractions, set some clear priorities, and crush out your Q3 goals, do not miss this webinar. August 19th, click the link in the description and I'll see you there. Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. What do New Zealand electricians and North American roofers have in common? Well, it turns out a lot more than you'd think, especially when it comes to the biggest problems we face in contracting. Things like finding skilled people, keeping margins healthy, and finally getting off those damn tools for those of you who are still stuck on them. Today, I'm joined by Tony Fraser-Jones, an entrepreneur, business coach, and founder of The Profitable Tradie, who's helped hundreds of contractors in Australia and New Zealand to build profitable businesses and self-managed companies. Tony and I, it turns out, we have a ton in common. We have similar backgrounds, similar career paths, and a very similar mission in life. In this episode, we get to compare notes on the opposite sides of the globe and unpack some of the most common systems that you can implement this quarter, no matter what hemisphere you're in. To help with this, I've attached some helpful downloads in the description, so make sure you grab those. Other than that, let's dive in with Tony. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Tony Fraser-Jones, coming from the other end of the planet. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks, Danny. It's good to be here, brother. Excited to hang out today and talk shop and chew the fat on something that we're both very interested in.
Yeah, I found it fascinating prepping with you. So you are from New Zealand, correct?
Yep. Yeah. So we live in New Zealand.
I am from, obviously, Canada, the other side of the planet. Reading through your LinkedIn, getting to know you a little bit on our prep call, I was like, you literally have the exact same background as me and somehow made yourself into the exact same world as I did. And so I thought it'd be such a neat thing today just to bring us together and talk about what's similar, what's different about the contractors you coach in Australia, New Zealand, what's going on in North America. I know we probably have a little bit of crossover, but man, let's even just start with your story because I find it fascinating how similar it actually is to what I've been doing.
So. Yeah. Well, It is interesting. I went to university, did that, worked in a corporate job, didn't like that very much, was largely unemployable, and decided to get into business for myself. So I actually opened a restaurant. It was a gourmet burger type restaurant. It was a franchise situation. And I learned a lot about business from that, and a lot about what I didn't like about business as well. So it was tough, man. And I started to have a family and the hours and stuff were just brutal. I found the unrelenting nature of, you know, hospitality is just so tough. And after about 4 years, I was like, we need to exit this. So we did and made a little bit of money and then set up a property business. We were buying and selling property, renos, lease options, rent to own, a whole bunch of different stuff. And that went really well until it didn't in about 2008, 2009. There was a big recession, probably remember. Subprime market, you know, exploded in the US and interest rates went through the roof. And I had all these properties that I was paying huge interest on, couldn't sell them. And it was a pretty bleak time, to be fair. I remember having to borrow a little bit of money from my father to keep things rolling. And I went to a few coaching seminars to help with our business. And I sort of thought about it and thought, geez, I'd really like to do that. And so that's how I kicked off on this. And I'd been helping some of the contractors and tradies that I was working with doing our property. I'd be on site out in the field with them doing stuff. And I helped some of them with their financials and stuff because I was okay with numbers. And the people I just started helping were contractors and tradespeople. And that was in about 2009, 2010. And fast forward to now, it's like 15 years, like I don't know how that goes so fast. And now we're working with over 700 contractors and tradies across Australia, New Zealand, and some in North America as well. So it's an amazing it's an amazing opportunity where you land, and I just feel really grateful that we can help people who are just honest, good, hardworking people to get a better result with their business and life. And as you know, business is super stressful, and the impact that a stressful business has on the family and stuff is massive. So I'm very passionate about helping people get a better result so they can have a better life.
And you felt it as a franchisee. So did I. I remember there was a lot of 80-hour work weeks and a lot of things that I was just like, I actually thought I wasn't a good business owner when I first started because of that. I was like, I suck at business. This is not my game. And I realized like I wasn't building systems. I wasn't processing through how to actually manage a company. I was just being a wild, crazy entrepreneur. And it sounds like you went through something similar. So
if you're listening to this pod, you're in business and you know that that stress, that emotional challenge of having a business, of having to make payroll, of wondering where the checks are coming from, of wondering how you're going to make wages, of paying your suppliers and tax and all that stuff, and the self-doubt, the kind of self-loathing sometimes when it's not going well and you doubt your ability, and it's a really challenging environment. So I think it's a real blessing and a privilege to be actually able to work and help people with that.
You know what's fascinating too about what two of us do is that there is no real school for this. Right. If you go to university to become a doctor or a lawyer, there's like a whole education path, there's regulations, but to be an entrepreneur, you just have to get a business license. And maybe sometimes you don't even do that. Right. And there's just like, go make it yourself. And I find it fascinating that you ended up creating a school for this, because it was not something that you think about when you're graduating university or high school to be like, this is what I'm going to do. So you kind of fall into it at some level. But
you do. And it's funny you say that, because I always liked teaching and that sort of thing. But if I'm honest, I could never be a teacher because they just don't get treated well and don't get paid very much as well. And they should get paid more. That's another whole question. But the privilege of actually helping people get a better result and seeing the light bulbs go on when people, those aha moments, I'm sure you've seen this, like the penny really drops and someone gets something, whether it's about their financials or, a way they're showing up as a leader or whatever it is. And it's pretty darn rewarding.
It is. And actually, you learn a lot from it. Like, and this is why I was so excited for today's podcast, because one thing that maybe I not even realize is they're like, man, are these my issues? And like, how do I get through these issues? And for you, you have a bird's eye view of hundreds and hundreds, if not over the years, thousands of businesses where you see patterns. And it's the same stuff over and over and over again. And I've certainly over the 10 years of doing Breakthrough Academy seen these patterns. And I was so stoked to talk to you and be like, is this the same in Australia? Is it the same in New Zealand? Is it different? Like, let's compare notes. So let's do that today. Let's get into some of the things that we've prepped a few things just so everybody knows. So we've thought through like, what are the biggest challenges? Turns out they're mostly the same. There's some unique stuff. But what is your take? What is your strategies? What are the things that you do to help your clients the most? I'll share some of mine as well. And let's see if we could just knock off a few like just bangers that'll help some people listening today.
Yeah. Definitely some of that low hanging fruit that's really gonna rock for people.
Let's do it. So the number one thing both of us discussed, everyone, you can tell us what you think it is, but it was skilled labor shortage, is it not? It's still skilled labor shortage.
It's crazy, right?
Why is it so hard to find people still in this industry? What is going on your end? What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, I think there's a few parts to this one. And the first part is, I think generally there's probably not enough A-grade tradespeople, journeymen, technicians, to make sure that everyone who has a business has A-grade players. And I don't think that's not just for plumbing and electrical and all the other trades and contracting businesses out there. I think that applies at a global level. Like most businesses, most areas don't have, everyone's not exceptional. There's a bunch who are good and there's a bunch in the middle who are kind of okay, and there's a bunch at the bottom who really, if they're in your business, you want to free them up so they can wreck someone else's business, Get rid of those ones. And so I think at a global level, there's probably just not as much talent. But honestly, I think the thing is for contractors and tradespeople is we don't actually invest. We don't think of training and growing people as an investment. And there's a mindset problem there. We think about it as cost. And the classic thing that happens in our experience is that people worry about training someone and giving them skills because they might leave. They might go to someone else and you've wasted all this money. And so there's a real fear around that. And for me, the problem is, you know, not so much worrying about training them and them leaving. It's how much is it actually going to cost you if they stay and you don't train them? Like, that's even worse. And so I think there's a real mindset challenge around understanding that great people are the key to success, and you have to invest in them. It takes time and effort, and it's worth it, and it's way better than the alternative. So I think that's quite a little shift that's hard for some people to make. In fact, I don't know what you find, Danny, but if I'm honest, some business owners are almost like, hey, I've given you a job. You should be grateful, and you should just do whatever you're told. And like, I get that. I mean, I'm sure you've felt like that. I think we all have, but it doesn't really work.
I find that they used to say that, and I find the last 4 or 5 years, I hear that very little. People are just been humbled. They're just like, you know what?
Yeah.
It is really impossible to find people, and I need to stop with the ego that I'm the owner and I'm the boss and I'm paying the paycheck because it's not working. Yeah. People are just leaving.
Yeah, 100%. And so we've found the people are really crushing in this area, and there are people who don't have a problem hiring A-grade employees. It's not a problem for them. And I think what we need to do is look at what they're doing and see what it's different. And for me, it's understanding it's an investment, not a cost. And it's also, they look at their business, because we're running service businesses, and service businesses require people. So we are basically in the people recruitment business as a mindset, not so much in the getting the job done business, which is obviously important, but that's a function of having the right people. And so the people who do well, they actually look at their business as a factory for growing good people. And I can think of a few people we've worked with, you know, one in particular, Matt from Plumbuilt's got a big business. It's a significant 7-figure business monthly. And he's built a system with the local high schools, you know, to identify the gateway students, the good students. And he's got a whole system to get them in the business regularly, find out who the good ones are, and he just snaps them up. And he runs an incredible social media campaign for getting employees. Like, he's always positioning his business as the place to work. They have a gym. They sponsor a bunch of sports things. And so their name is out there. And you would think that they're doing that to get get clients. But actually, they're doing it to get employees. So they're creating that sort of employer of choice mentality. And I think that's your employer brand, as it were. That's really how you get the best people. Rather than just worrying about, oh, I can't find them and it's too hard. And I think that's a trap we fall into. I'm sure you see that. It's like people just kind of give up. It's like it's too hard and they sort of throw the towel in. But there is definitely stuff you can do.
Yeah, what you're speaking to is like looking at this as a marketing and sales activity, not just a recruitment activity. And there are very similar principles that exist in marketing and sales, and branding is very much one of them, right? Like, if you're going to go and just put out ads on Facebook and be able to pull clients in from doing that, eventually you're going to run out of steam. But by building a brand for your customer, you're going to build something that's long lasting. And the same is true for your employer brand with your people. You're saying invest in that in the long term. And sometimes it's not as transactional of a return. I'm not just getting an application, but I'm giving my presence to certain people in certain communities. And I'm showing up in certain ways where people see me and they visualize like, I could be here. I could actually work here. Versus like, where can I get $20 an hour versus $23 an hour? It becomes less transactional. You become more of a choice.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly important. Just like when you're marketing for jobs and projects, it's like they might take someone who's cheaper. You don't want that. You want to deliver value, and it's the same in reverse. And so marketing for talent, for me, is the most important thing that a contractor or a tradesperson can do in their business, because you have to have a team to grow your business. And if you don't have that, it's very difficult. And like you said, there's a lot to it. The socials are important. I mean, I can think of a number of members, and I think of a landscaping contractor who has spent so much time posting all the jobs they're doing before and afters. They have a golden shovel for the employee of the month. They post that up. They post testimonials. They post little snippets about the team. And what they've found is they had a terrible problem hiring qualified landscapers and four person. But now they get people actually applying when they're not even, you know, don't have a job application now. And that's the shift, because it's that brand positioning, and people are like, well, this looks like a good place. I've been following them for 6 months, 12 months, whatever it is, 18 months sometimes. And I'm not seeing the stuff where I've worked or where I've worked in the past. It's like, the place I'm at now is not doing any of this stuff. And so that's the difference. I think that's very powerful. So it is, you know, like you said, there's not, the good people aren't a dime a dozen, they're not everywhere, but the people who are doing this well can actually find what they need.
Yeah. What you're commenting on is something I used to call the fishing net. So how long is your net in the water when you're recruiting? Is it only in for the 3 or 4 weeks that you need to hire that one specific role and then you pull the net back out? Because if that's the case, you're going to miss out on the, like, whatever, let's call it 4 weeks of the year. They're going to miss on the other like 48 weeks of the year where that person might potentially become available. And your brand is one of those things that if done right, is going to be 52 weeks of the year, be present and visible to the people that are looking out there. And you said something else. I just want to clarify this, but you said something around when you're posting online, you can post projects, but the shift is actually to post about your people. And it's just like, we could just post like the projects, the cool projects we do, and our customers might be impressed, but post about your people too. And that's kind of like a part of the employer brand. And you'd be surprised. I've seen this with our members. The customers like it too, because they're like, we want to know the people that are going to come and work on our homes. It has a double positive.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's even down to things like values. Like for me, values are very powerful. And I know like there's a lot of kind of management hoo-ha about values and they get stuck on the wall and nobody looks at them. But if you're a business that has values that you stand by and are front and center in your business, they might be really simple things like honesty and integrity and pride in my work and, you know, results focused and customer service. It doesn't have to be massively like, you know, fancy, but you can talk about those on your socials as well. You can say, hey, one of our values is this and explain what it means and talk about that on your socials. Now, your clients will love it, but I tell you what, the team members will never seen anything like it. You know, potential employees, they're like, well, we don't have values at our business. We have like, you know, we might get a beer and a sausage occasionally. That's kind of what we get. And so you really position yourself as quite different. And we find when you talk about values, you have values in your job ads as well. That really resonates with the right people. And it's the right people you want to apply. And most often they're already working somewhere else. So you've got to actually pull them. And like you said, the brand and all of that work is a big part of that.
That's amazing. Do you want me to give you mine? I've got one.
Let's
I've
do
got,
it. I'd love to
I've
hear.
I've got more than one, but I'm going to give one. Yeah. This concept of recycling applications, and I don't know if you guys do this. Probably you do. It's just, it's this, how many, I mean, we spend a lot of hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on recruitment, but like, let's just say for the average contractor, thousands to tens of thousands of dollars a year, you're spending on generating app flow. And so you'll go through those applications. Some people you get a hold of, some people you don't. You could probably rate them. My recommendation is always rate them out of 10, but then store them. So some people have an ATS system, an applicant tracking system. If you don't, use Dropbox or just some sort of online file storage system. Every resume you get, rate it out of 10, put the position they applied for and the last communication we had with them as the file name. Now you can sort that by name at any time and have your 10s and 9s and 8s and 6s and 7s, so below, all there at all times. And one thing I used to do is just slowly nurture those people. Now that can be an engagement of just an update of what's going on in the company. One thing I did every single year though, is I made sure that I would message those same applications. So I'd say, hey, so-and-so, our company XYZ is currently looking for a person in XYZ role. Curious if you might know anybody who'd be a good fit. Please see link below. You know, PS, we're offering a $1,000 hiring bonus. Be happy to share that with you if you didn't know anybody. So I'm not even saying, do you want a job now that it's been a year? I'm just saying, do you know anybody? The right people? They're interested. The other people, it's $1,000. They might want to be able to refer somebody. But your app flow goes from 10 people to 100 people to 1,000 people that probably applied for your company over the last, whatever, 5, maybe 10 years. And by keeping in the engagement with those original applications, you're increasing your spread and network of the types of people that you could work with. And these people applied for you at once. So whether they're ready for it or not, their network, like minds do know like minds, their network is likely open and available if you tap into it.
Yeah, I think that's a great strategy, and it's you know, a sale, which is what's happened when someone joins your business. It's a sale, it's a recruitment sale, just not a project sale. You know, sales take 9 to 12 touch points, and so it's the same thing in reverse when you're hiring people. So that top of mind awareness and just that continual contact, I think, is a great strategy, and having a system, as you said, to do it helps massively because I don't know how many times I've heard it. Someone's applied. And our clients like really excited about it, but it just didn't work out. And it circles back around, you know, it might be 6, 12, 18, 24 months later. So I think that's a killer strategy. Then everyone should definitely be doing that.
When you hire a recruiting firm and you wonder where they're getting their applications, a lot of them have a big bench of people, a massive bench of people that they've been holding on to and harvesting, or what do you want to call it, like nurturing for many years. So why wouldn't we do that internally in our own businesses?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's just the mindset of understanding how important this is, because I know if you're listening, you're probably like, oh, well, I'm too busy. I've got projects happening and other stuff happening. But this is actually the important stuff that will make your life easier in the long run. And that's why it's so important.
This was also the thing for you and me that we both identified as the top challenge for our contractors right now. And if it's happening in New Zealand, Australia, and it's happening in North America, and it's what both of us who work with hundreds, if not thousands of people over the last 10, 15 years, were identifying, chances are it's the number one thing in your business too. You might want to treat it.
It's massive. I think so.
So, okay, let's get into the next one. So the next one we thought was financial management. And I'll let you kind of open with this, but like, I'm just curious to know on your end, like, is it similar? That's what's happening in North America is what's happening in here. Like, what economic factors are influencing things, whether it's rates or banks? We've got obviously tariffs going on right now. Yep. What's squeezing margins down there? Or is it all going well?
Yeah, look, I think it's very similar. You know, the people we work with in Australia, New Zealand, and the people that we help in North America, and the people obviously you're helping, I think it's very similar. And it goes back to COVID, really. So, you know, we had COVID. It's like 5 years ago that started. That's incredible. It's like hard to
never,
believe.
But never anyway, heard of what's COVID?
Yeah, that's right. We should like, let's not listen anymore. But obviously the governments, you know, they basically just went crazy and printed money. And so there was so much money flying around, and construction went crazy and prices went crazy, and you couldn't get materials. It was just a nightmare, right? So inflation prices went out of control, and the government was like, we can't have that. So they put interest rates up, and that squeezed the economy. And we've had this recession, as well as tariffs coming in. So there's a lot of uncertainty. Hopefully that's sort of working its way through, but we'll see where that lands. Who knows? You know, that's like the never ending story. But what's really happened as a result, whereas, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, it was full on. Now, there's less projects in the property and construction, and I think that's happening in general. And so there's more contractors and tradespeople fighting for less jobs. And also a lot of the guys who are doing construction work, they're having to filter back into service and maintenance work. So there's more, you know, competition there. Banks aren't funding as much because, you know, they're fair weather friends. They'll take the umbrella away when it's raining. So it's pretty typical, but anyway, so you can't get construction finances easily. And so what that means is there's more competition and there's more pressure on prices. It's harder to maintain margins. And so it's been a more challenging time, and there's less, in my experience, work going around. Not for everyone, obviously, but in general. And so that's put a lot of pressure on margins and profitability and cash flow. I don't know. What have you seen with this? Is it similar?
So yes, subjectively maybe, or I talk to certain people and I hear that. Here's my thoughts on this too. I think we went from a massively overinflated market to a normal market. And I think we're adjusting to that. And, you know, when I think back to 2008 and I look at what was going on there, it's vastly different than what's happening right now. And so, yeah, you're right. There are, you know, more contractors chasing fewer dollars, but in relation to what? In relation to us printing in North America over 40% of our, you know, dollars in circulation over a 12-month period and then watching that flush through the system, like that's unprecedented. That's, I don't know if that's ever happened in the history of the modern man.
Right.
It's crazy. So we are attempting, I think, at this point to exist in a normal market, and we're complaining about it, not realizing, hey, this is normal. We actually need to get really good at this, because this is what entrepreneurship actually is. It was kind of a free ticket for a while. Now we got to go do our job.
Yeah, and there's a lot of I definitely agree on that, Danny. And there's a lot of contractors who perhaps haven't been through an economic cycle or two. And it's not normal for it to be just so busy as it was. That is not normal. And now it's like the tough have to get going, because it is, you know, it's an environment where you actually have to work for your crust.
And I will say, there are, like, I talked to some of our custom home builders in Ontario, where there's certain markets that are depressed. Like, people are holding on to their money. They're in a wait and see mode. So there are elements, I shouldn't speak for all industries and all, there are elements that are quite a bit more challenging than they even should be. But generally, when you kind of look across the North American market, it's like, we're fine. We need to go do our job. We need to get good at like managing our cash flow, managing our dollars, making sure that they go far and that we don't just take it for granted and check the bank once a year to see if we made money. Like we need to get more precise. So,
and I think that's the thing here. We might be saying this is a normal environment or even it's a bit tough or whatever it is. The basics are the same. And I think that's the miss here. It's just when times are, you know, when you've got to know your stuff, it's more important to be across your financials almost though when it's going well. And that's the big miss that I see. And the big upside for most contractors and tradies is that once they get into understanding their numbers, their life and their business really transforms. For me, most businesses, they don't have a pricing or a financials problem. They actually have a tracking and a measurement problem. They just don't really know what's going on. And for me, the starting point is to understand the profitability of your jobs. And I call that back costing, which is basically you do the job, you go back and figure out how it landed. And that really simply is you've priced it, then you go and see how much labor you used, what were the material costs, is there any other subcontractors or other costs associated with a job, and look at how it turned out. And if you do that for every single job, I guarantee that your life and your business will change immeasurably because you will start to understand where you're making money in your business. You'll start to understand what clients make you money, what type of work makes you money. You'll see where your systems are falling down. Where you need to improve them. You'll see where, you know, perhaps your team are not doing what they should or they could improve their productivity. I can think of a client that I helped many years ago. They had a moderately sized business, like $2.5 to $3 million in revenue. And they had a client, custom home builder. They did a lot of work for a high volume builder. It was probably about $800,000 to $1 million of revenue. Now, these guys had massive tax problems, about $300,000 owing to the tax office. They were in trouble. They didn't really understand the profitability of their jobs. They measured it. It was about 20 to 22% for these homes, which is quite low, plumbing business. And so when they back-costed those jobs, they figured out that actually there was like 18, 20, 25, 27 trips out to the field to do these jobs. It was just completely disorganized. The builder was disorganized, they were disorganized. And so they streamlined those operations with the right systems. They got that down to 6 to 8 trips. They adjusted the margins slightly. They got the margins on those jobs up to 33, 35%. But they never would have done that without understanding the actual mechanics, the specific detail of the job. And every contractor, if you're a builder, you need to do it in stages of perhaps you're a subcontractor, you know, it's slightly easier because the jobs might be smaller. But that's like the bedrock of success for me, to run a profitable contracting business.
What you're talking about is the ability to manage, I call like the 1%. So think about like 100%. Everybody out there listening, what's the size of the business? 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 5 million, some 10 more, right? But on a $1 million business, 1% in material or in running to the material shop back and forth on labor, on fuel, on whatever it is, 1% on $1 million worth of revenue is $10,000. And that's not 10 grand of just like, oh, I could do that, you know, just put it towards somewhere else in the business. So that's 10 grand of net profit that should have actually been made because it's not gotten spent anywhere else. You didn't spend it on overhead. It just got vaporized on the job site because Johnny went back to, we call it Home Depot out here, but like went back to the material supply store too many times because we bought a little bit too much equipment or a little bit too much material because we overestimated because we didn't train the guys how to do things. So they've been doing it in a weird way. I'll tell you a funny story. I remember training my painters, and I did this on purpose just to see how influential they were, to go up a ladder and bring what we call a pot hook with them. And so they put the pot hook on the side of a can in order to like hang it on the side of a ladder. And I said, well, before you go up the ladder though, make sure you have the pot hook hanging on your ear. And then when you get to the top, you take it off your ear and then you clip it onto the can and then you could put it on your, and they all followed me. And they never asked questions. And they did it for like a full day. And I realized, I was like, there are small things when you train someone. This, by the way, this is not the right way to do it. I was just joking with them. But if you train them a certain way or lack thereof, they will do that for weeks, months, if not years, unattended and just keep going, just burning through those 1% because you never looked and you never made change.
Yeah, like the devil is definitely in the detail. And because even if you're doing large jobs, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars and that's one job, there's so many little cycles of work within that job. Or if you're service and maintenance work and you're doing 10 jobs a day, the volume of work is so, the cadence is so high that the money is made by making each day and each job work well. And as you said, it's lost by that little leakage all the time. And the 1% is true. And it just staggers me. And it's very satisfying when you see it, is that people can get 10, 15, 20% improvement in their gross margin, which is like doubling it, by actually just tracking what's going on. It still astounds me. I still get goosebumps when I see it happen. It's just incredible. I mean, I can think of, we've got a roofing contract that we help in Ontario, and he has 248 roofs for $25,000 profits a year ago. That's crazy, right? No money. Tracker's margin, last financial year, $254,000 in profit at a 45% gross margin, just by costing the jobs and figuring out where he was going wrong. And it's funny, because when you look at it, everyone owning a business is smart. We're entrepreneurs. We'll see what's going wrong straight away, and we'll fix it. But if you don't look, you'll never see it, and you won't fix it.
You can't change it.
I mean, it's kind of basic, isn't it? But it's just so powerful.
You can't change what you don't see. That old adage. And it's,
oh mate.
I used to do these job costing. We used to do it manually. This is when I was 18, 19 years old. But I remember, like, end of day, 8 at night, 9 at night. Sometimes there's paint all over my hands. I'm sitting on my bed, just like writing on my job costing sheets. But when you start doing it, it's kind of addictive, because you start to see all the opportunity, and it's not too late. Like, if I made a mistake on this one project, I now have another one in production where I can see what's going on, and I can go to the job site first thing in the morning and start to make those changes. So I found it a bit of a dopamine release, to be honest, once I got used to doing it, because it was like, oh, there's opportunity in this. There's dollars in all of this.
So much money. I think the thing that bends my head sometimes, Danny, is, and we see this with, you know, people might join our program. They do really well. They make a lot of money, a lot of improvement. And then you find it might be 12, 18 months, 24 months in, all of a sudden they have this blip and they start to have a wobble and some cash flow challenges. And you ask them, oh, how's your back costing going? And they're like, yeah, it's good. And I'm like, well, how many jobs are your back costing? Oh, yeah, some. And it's like, well, how many is some? Is that like all, or is it like three? Oh, it's like three. And so they've fallen off the wagon, and things start to go wrong. And it's like, this is not a negotiable. It has to be done all the time. And to say you're too busy to do it is like playing a game of football without keeping the score. Like, nobody ever would do that. Well, I wouldn't. I'm sure you wouldn't. I want to know who's winning.
All the time and on time. You know, I knew we would bring up this topic that people would be like, I do. We call it job costing, but I do back costing. Yep. I do job costing. Like, it's all good. I'll just maybe skip forward to the next section. No. Like, I bet most of you don't. And if you do, you don't do it consistently, and you don't do it right after the project. You wait too long. Yeah. And some of that data that you could have used to change projects and jobs gets lost in translation. So yeah, I would call out the audience. And yes, for the 10% of you that do, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the other 90.
Yeah. Props to you, the rest of you. Let's get real. Let's get busy.
So my thought on this, and all the things that you just mentioned, there's a whole bunch more on budgeting and annual, you know, job costing for the whole company. But one thing I noticed that was really interesting is when we started doing KPI dashboards, and it wasn't just, so key performance indicator dashboards, and it wasn't just the one glaringly obvious thing, which I really enjoyed working with my clients on, and even for our own company, is like goal versus actual. So I've got a goal and I've got an actual, and now I know when I'm ahead, when I'm behind, by how much and why. Because otherwise, most project management softwares, QuickBooks, you know, whatever accounting system you guys use out there, what's it called again? What's the one in Australia?
Oh, there's QuickBooks, there's Intuit, there's Xero, there's all sorts of
Xero.
Xero is probably one. Yeah, yeah.
But they almost all just tell you where you're at. They don't really tell you where you're supposed to be. And when you see the gap in some of this stuff, you start to see just how big the problem is or is not. But when all you know is we have this much in revenue and this much in profit, like, is that good? Is that bad? Like, what's your benchmark against it? And then I went a little deeper and I found some really interesting stuff. And I said, okay, so let's look at one problem in the business. And it looks like profitability is down by 3% or 4% or whatever it is. How do we work on this? And then I look over to the left and I have gotten this exact same dashboard, their sales ratio. And I'm like, your sales ratio has gone from 60% to 70%. They're like, I know, isn't it great? And I'm like, no, I actually don't think it is. I would rather see it at 60% and your gross profit margin up that 5%. It looks like you're actually costing yourself, this pride of booking all this work is costing you margin. Let's increase price, decrease sales ratio, and then bring that margin. And you can start to see how all these little levers not only play individually in the business, but play together. Any thoughts on that? I don't know.
Yeah, look, it's It's massive. I mean, it's so important that every month we look at our members, you know, financials and send them a report on where they're at, because this stuff has to be front and center. Like, it's everything. And as we said, you can't manage what you don't measure. And that applies to not only the revenue, the margin, but like you said, the conversion rates, how many leads you're getting, how much they cost, all that stuff. Because if you manage that, you'll start, you know, if you measure it, you'll start making the adjustments. And it's I suppose it's like driving a car. You know, you have a car with a dashboard, and you know the fuel and the temperature and the speed, which occasionally I exceed, I apologize, already. But you wouldn't drive a car without that. You couldn't. And so how can you, you know, drive your business without that? And I think the benchmarks are powerful. And I know, you know, with the work that you do with your members and likewise with us, one of the biggest, you know, gifts you can give people is a target to aim for that other people are hitting. And they're like, all of a sudden, oh, well, that's where I should hit. And it lifts them. And that's very, very powerful. It's almost like they have permission to charge what they should charge to get the margin that they really deserve to be making.
It's funny. A lot of our members really appreciate benchmarks when we can get them to them. And it is an interesting, it is very much just permission more than it is anything else.
Yeah, it is.
Like, oh, I can do that? It's like, yeah, you can.
And you should.
And you should.
And I'll kick your butt if you don't.
I use a lot of our members to do work on my own home, and I always just like, oh, you guys are so expensive, but I'm just like, but this is what I trained you to do. And I look at their companies and I'm like, and it works. Like, you're actually profitable. You actually have a sustainable organization, and you're not like just that, on a razor's
edge. That makes me laugh. My friends and family say, make sure you use the contractors you haven't worked with yet to do your work, because they'll be cheaper.
It's true. but I'm like, you know what? You've got great customer service. I enjoy the process. And hey, I did this to myself. So let's.
Well, and I'm like, no, I'd rather pay them well. Yeah. Because I know they're going to do a good job. So it's value-based for me.
Totally. Let's get into the next one. So we both agreed on this one. So productivity and owner focus. So when I look at this, I'm like, why are owners in both hemispheres still trapped on the tools? What are we doing wrong here? What's going on?
Yeah, it's a biggie, right? I mean, for me, there's two parts. There's a mindset part, and then there's a practical element. And honestly, from a belief perspective, I just think some people don't actually believe it's possible to get off the tools, to get out of working in the field, and or maybe they think more people is just more stress, or maybe they just don't think they're good enough. I think there's some of that, to be honest. So the belief side of it is massive. So they, you know, they maybe think more people is more stress, and or they fear giving up control, that, you know, there'll be too many mistakes. And what they don't understand, that there's an inverse relationship between growth and control. You can't have growth without, you know, relinquishing some control. Not giving up control, you put the systems in place. So there's that. So that's sort of the mindset side of it. And the practical side is there's actually some steps in an order that you need to take to actually free yourself up from being, you know, the key person for projects. And so we have a roadmap that we outline. And it just goes through the key areas of business, you know, sales, marketing, financials, team, leadership. And at different levels of revenue, you need to do different things. You know, for example, if you're 300 to 500K in revenue, which is just a small business, maybe you've got yourself and one or two other people. You know, for sales, you need a good inquiry script. You know, how are you going to actually field inquiries so you do it properly? And then to get to, you know, $1 million, well, then you need a good follow-up process. And to get to $2 million, you're going to need to hire an estimator. You know, you're going to have to outsource you're going to have to get someone else to do some pricing, because you're just not going to be able to do it all. So there's some real steps, I think, mindset, and then understanding the steps and in what order to do them to actually get to where you want to go, I think is the key. But it's a big challenge, right? And I think belief is a big part of it. I'd love to know what you think, because, you know, this is the key question we get asked all the time.
I think that, I think people fall in love with being useful. And so they give themselves lots of things to do. And so they get trapped in those things to do. And then that becomes an expectation, and expectation becomes a lifestyle. And I think that people also just are so busy sometimes they forget to take time to actually like allocate what is on their plate and what is off their plate. And this is actually something I've had to be very intentional of myself, because every year the business grows and every year things change and every year my responsibilities grow, and not every year am I letting go of all the things I did last year, right? And so We put an exercise out on this, and I don't know, maybe Lauren, you want to put a link in the description for this. I don't know, but we give this thing called I don't even know what it's called. Save 5 hours a week exercise. Let's just call it that. Yeah. But it's something that I learned years ago. And when I do a good job of this, it just clears my calendar up. And it's just this ability to make a list of everything you do in a week and circle the stuff that's high time consumption, but low skill. And so where's the cross section of stuff that's taking up the most of my, whether it's, you know, trips to the job site, whether it's customer complaints, whether it's could be building certain parts of the business, even if you're big enough, because you don't need to be doing that anymore. But it's the stuff that's high time consumption and low skill. Circle all that stuff. And that needs to first, you need to look at how can this be delegated down to the right role within my organization. If that role doesn't exist and should, and there's enough of those things, that's warranting for hiring, because it's probably going to be the biggest ROI role you could hire for, regardless of the cost of salary. Often in the beginning, it's admin. Actually, it's one of the cheaper things that you could hire for. Or in today's world, automate. There's so many pieces of technology. AI is incredible. It's like, well, we've always done it that way. Whenever you say that, you need to go look for an automation. There's a chance there's probably in the last 6 months an automation just came out. Four of them just came out. And
probably in the last 6 minutes, yeah. To be honest, but anyway.
And so it's like that list and then delegate, hire, automate. What are my options? And then start to move on some of this stuff. And so it kind of speaks a little to what you're talking about even, which is like, what are the systems at certain stages? And mine's just a bit more maybe of a self-evaluation of it, of your role to be able to find those options. So.
Yeah. And I think there are two parts to it. It is your personal productivity and focus, and then it's the structure of your organization. And I think we spend a lot of time working on organization structure with our members and understanding that, you know, if you want to be at this level of revenue and profitability, your structure is probably going to look something like this. And you cannot do $5 million of revenue with five tradespeople and an office manager. This just doesn't work. I mean, it's kind of obvious. And so you need to build out a structure that works. And I've seen, and you actually, the challenge is you actually have to invest in that structure often in advance. And that's where people get really tripped up. They're like, well, I don't have the work yet, or what happens if it doesn't work, or I don't have the cash. But the thing is, you can only afford the thing once you have the thing. It's like an estimator. You can afford them when you have them. But if you don't get them, you're never going to get there. Your business is literally cannot grow. I love the estimate is a good example because, you know, you might have a business doing $2 million in revenue or $3 million, whatever it is, and you've got that requires quite a bit of pricing to be done. If you want to go to $5 million, you're just going to have to price, you know, 40% more work, whatever it is. That actually has to happen, and that's just going to take more time. And literally your business, if it doesn't have the right structure, just cannot do that, so it won't grow.
I think it'll
–
go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted you.
That's right. I'll interrupt your interruption and let you go.
Okay. I think that's why people initially, anyways. I think that's why people are paying us to do the work we do, because I think at some level they're going down a path of uncertainty and they're hitting barriers and they're getting way ahead of themselves and feeling that pressure of like I'm way big, like there's more going on in the business than I have capacity to handle, and they get kind of whatever you call it, too big for your or whatever that saying is. Yep. And so it's interesting, yeah, as you go down that path with them, you start to show them and you say, hey, we have hundreds, if not thousands of people that we've done this with. Here's the next step coming your way. And then there's the resistance of like, wait, I got to hire those two roles. Like those are all overhead. Like but the ability and the ones that I see do the best with us is the ability to trust in the process and build ahead of yourself versus always be building behind yourself. Right. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah, you do have to build ahead. If you build behind, you really struggle. And this is a challenge, and I get it. And for us, I guess it's about holding that light up and say, yeah, this is the way. These are the people have done. I think I'm sure you find this as well. A big benefit of, you know, involved in organizations like ours is you see where other people are at. You have exemplars, you have case studies, you can see what people have done. And I know when we get our members together, there's so many breakthroughs because they're like, oh, that person was where I was 6 months ago, and this is what they did, and so that's what I need to do. And it's actually quite maddening sometimes because as a coaching team, you can tell them that, you know, 73,000 times, and then someone else says it, and they just get it in an instant. And I like to think we've plowed the ground and we've sown the seeds. I'm sure that's part of it, but that that belief that they get is very powerful from seeing how other people have done it. I think that really, really helps.
Same over here, man. Exact same. So
good. I'm pleased it's not just me.
We will show, and this isn't true for everybody, but generally we'll show them what to do, but it's the members themselves. When they collaborate together and start to talk, it starts to click and the buy-in really starts to come. And I always find that too. They hire us originally because they want us to show them what to do. And that helps for a while, but it's like, let me go talk to other people who have done this before, who are actually doing it today. That makes a huge impact. So
yeah. And I think just one thing, Danny, here is we're talking about getting off the tools and we're thinking about that's getting out of doing field work or off projects. But, you know, we've got a lot of businesses who are bigger than that. And I can think of several who are, you know, $1 million revenue businesses plus a month and a multi-million dollar profit businesses. But the owner, when they've come to us, is still donkey deep in pricing, operations. And that's just another kind of on the tools role really in a business. And it's really stuffing up the business. It's constipating the growth of the business and it's making the owner's life a misery because they are so tapped out. They are so pulled in so many directions. So again, it's a structure thing. What's the next role? What's the next estimator? What's the next four-person or divisional foreman or whatever it is, or marketing person or salesperson or BDM that you need to free up time so you can keep elevating yourself and keep that business growth going? That process kind of never ends. I'd love to say it does, but it really doesn't.
It never ends. And if we're all honest with ourselves, like I get myself into this. Do you get yourself into this? Because this is...
No comment.
Yeah, no comment. This is the reality of growing an organization, right? And it will happen even if you're a pro. It's going to happen. And so I've gotten myself into this numerous times and I'm willing to admit it because I think it's important that all entrepreneurs realize like even in your best of times, this stuff's going to happen. And that's why we're entrepreneurs. We have to kind of go through these hard lessons. A lot of people aren't willing to learn them. At least we're out there trying. So.
Yeah, man. Plenty of mistakes here. That's why I've got no hair left.
I thought we blamed it on your grandpa. No, we didn't.
That's right.
Okay. Final one. And let's wrap up shortly after. So sales and marketing, you brought this one to my attention, which I agree. Yep. And it's something that I think has been more of a thing, as we talked about the economy, more of a thing in the last 2 years, right? So what's going on? What are you doing about it with your members? What are some good just like wins and thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think the game's changed, but most people haven't updated their playbook. And it's more of a normal environment. In some areas, it's a little depressed. And so you actually have to fight for work. Whereas before, you put your shingle up and just work seemed to arrive more than you could cope with. And so sales and marketing are more important. And unfortunately, you know, if I'm really honest, it's a skill set that very few contractors and tradespeople have. You know, we get really good at doing the job and projects and maybe even project management because we do more of it. But the actual marketing is tough. So for me, it is a strategy question. And the big mistake I see is people want work. And so maybe they get hit up by an SEO company or a social media agency or someone and they're like, oh yeah, we can help you, and they give them money and then they wonder why it doesn't really work. And because it's a back to front thing, you have to choose who you want to target. And so that's the strategy, is like, what sort of work do I want? That's the key thing for me. It's Dan Kennedy's 3 M's of marketing. I'm sure you've heard about it. It's pretty simple stuff, but what market in detail specifically am I going to try and get work from? And so it might be, if you're a plumber, it might be I want to work with high-end custom builders, or it might be I want to do commercial work, or it might be I want to work with real estates or property managers or whatever it is. So you figure out who they are, because then you know who to actually go and knock on the door to get the work from. Otherwise, you're just kind of throwing stuff into the ether and hoping something happens. And often that's a way to lose a lot of money and not get good ROI on your marketing. Once you know who you're going to target, you figure out what the message is important, what's important for those people, what's going to help them work with you. And then finally, you figure out how to target them. And so, for example, if you're a subcontractor and you want to work with a bunch of general contractors or builders, often the easiest way, rather than doing Google ads and a whole lot of social media, is just to target them directly with, you know, get a list of who they are and target them with some direct mail and follow-up strategy, and good old-fashioned, pounding the pavement is often the best way. And rather than spending a whole lot of money on digital marketing, which would be a good strategy if you were targeting service and maintenance work from residential clients, you know, in your domestic area. So I think that's the strategy is really important.
It's an analogy I use is fishing. So it's like, what type of fish am I trying to catch? And so those are the characteristics of the fish or the ideal customers you're speaking to, right? So it's like their psychographics, demographics, which is basically like, where do they hang out? Where do they spend their money? What are they doing 9 to 5? What are they doing Monday to Friday? What are they doing on the weekends? Where are their eyeballs going online, offline? Like, get to know your customer. And then, so this is the fish, what kind of lure does that fish bite on? And so that's the message that you're speaking to. And so what, because I could put on a worm, I could put on a piece of pizza, I could put on a spinner, I could whatever, right? But I got to use the right message for the right characteristics of that fish. And then finally, what was the last one you said? What's the way you?
It's the media. It's the actual, you know, is it Google Ads? Is it Facebook? Is it paid ads? Is it, you know, telemarketing? Is it flyers? Is it cold calling? Whatever it is, it's the actual, the mechanism that you get that message across to your market.
The tactic. So I call that the pond. So what pond are we going to put our lure into? Because I could go put it into this river or into this soup of a pond thing, like whatever it is. It's like it has to match where they actually, okay, good. It's cool. Exact same. Good. So
I think that's big. And I guess at another level, it's actually understanding that the key to success in business is generating leads. That's everything. That kicks everything off. And the downstream consequences of not having enough marketing, it flows through to your margin because you become desperate for work. So you price bargain basement just to get stuff. And that just has this massive chain reaction down your business. And so this is tough. But I think as a business owner, you don't have to be an expert at marketing, but you do just have to spend enough time educating yourself so you can ask an intelligent question of the people you might get to help you with marketing. And that's, you know, we spend a lot of time with our members educating them about marketing and different strategies so they can make good decisions. Because otherwise, I don't know if you find this, but they tend to spend money in areas that just do not generate return. And they find that very frustrating because I needed more work. I don't have enough cash. Now I've spent all this money and I'm in a worse position, no further ahead.
You just mentioned something in passing too, as you described the actual tactic of like making a list of all your customers, calling through them and being able to, that's active marketing versus passive marketing. And I find a lot of people that aren't as experienced with marketing, they just try and do all the passive stuff, especially through the COVID time. It's like, let's just do a bunch of passive stuff. Like you put up our shingles, as you said it, and let's just let the work come our way. And I find as markets get tighter and there is more contractors going after smaller amounts of dollars, active marketing is a very powerful thing to get good at. Now, whether you need it all the time or not is debatable by industry, by person, by area, but it's a very cool thing because that's the predictable revenue, the ability to turn the dial up and or down. When I was 18, we used to do a lot of door-to-door, and it was the most powerful thing because it was very calculable. I knew pre-2008, it took 10 doors to knock to get a lead. During 2008, 2009, it took 20 doors to knock to get a lead, but I knew that. And I knew that I could just double my hours or double my team's hours in getting that result in order to have that ROI that I needed, which was a lead. And I needed 3 leads to do a quote. And I needed, you know, 2 or 3 quotes to get a job. And I could calculate it all the way through. And I had an ability to create predictable revenue. Active marketing, for me anyways, was a massive way to achieve that.
Yeah, I love that. Actually, I've never thought about calling it active marketing. I've just thought about it. You have to put effort into your marketing. It's kind of what I mean by that is if you actually spend time on it and you're proactive in terms of getting out there and shaking the tree rather than maybe just putting a few ads up and seeing what happens or relying on word of mouth, it really does make a difference. And the shortest distance between two people is the telephone, and then it's meeting them face to face. Like there's a lot of power in that. And one strategy we find fantastic, which might be helpful for the listeners, is what we call lumpy mail. And if you're targeting contractors or businesses that, you know, it's typically business to business work where there's a decent lifetime value, and lifetime value is how much is that client worth to you over the long run. You create a sales letter and create a nice gimmick, sort of a lump. It could be anything, could be a switch or toilet roll or a hammer or, you know, whatever it is that works for your business. And you send that and you courier it, they get it, they open it, and then you follow it up, and it really positions you as differently. And that's a powerful strategy because you can measure it. It's very deliberate. You know that the people who are buyers are getting the stuff. And you're not going to win every one of them, but if you send, you know, 50, you'll get people sending you the opportunity to quote and bid, and that's very, very powerful.
Memorable. Is that Dan Kennedy? I feel like I've heard that one before. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Dan Kennedy, yeah. Love Dan Kennedy. There was rumors about his death, but he's back in business, so.
He's back. He rose back.
He's back. just like Lazarus.
I'll give you a version of this. It's a little different, but we used to do, so that whole door-to-door strategy, we used to do it on job sites. So we would have two signs up on the job site. We'd have usually two signs up in the arteries leading into that residential neighborhood. This is more residential strategy, but and we would have door hangers that looked like I used to have Canada Post, obviously, but like a postal service door hanger that they leave after you've missed your package. And so they need you to sign off on it. And so we made it look similar, but with our own brand. And then we had it on the front pre-printed. Hey, we noticed your blank was blank. And then we'd handwrite on that. We noticed your trim was peeling or your door was fading or whatever it was. And so people from 10 feet away thought they missed a package. Then they read it. And then I see them looking at their trim boards and they're like, huh. And then they go into their house. And I'm like, I'm coming door to door knocking on your house next. So it was a good, like you just said, like intro to get the conversation started. Yep. To warm people up. But
yeah, you're owning the neighborhood. I love that.
That's literally what we used to call it, was owning the neighborhood.
Yeah, so good.
Tony, this was great. I thought just like two final questions, then we'll wrap up. Just your thoughts and insight on the biggest opportunity for contractors going into 2026, so next year, and the biggest headwind for contractors in 2026, and one way to prepare.
Yeah, for me, the biggest opportunity and probably the biggest headwind, if you don't get it right, is what's happening with AI, artificial intelligence. And the way that AI can improve your business and streamline your operations, it's quite incredible. And I heard a story the other day that in 1900, they had a photo of a street in New York, and it was all horses and carriages. And the same street in 1913, there were no horses, no carriages, it was all cars. Now, in 1900, the horses thought that they were set for life. There's no conception that things might change. And I think AI at the moment is a little bit like that for us. And so the opportunities are huge. So for me, the opportunity to make your life easier, to make you sound more professional, to help you with your marketing, to analyze your performance of your business using AI is just a huge opportunity. At the same time, if you don't get on this bandwagon, I guess this is the potential headwind, is you could get left behind. Things could change very quickly, and you are the horse wondering what happened to your business. And for me, the key takeaway or the key thing is you may be doing some stuff in this area. If you're not, please don't stress out about it. All you need to do is just get started. And so my suggestion would be just get a ChatGPT account, open it up, and just tell ChatGPT, you just write into ChatGPT, tell them about your business, where you're based, some of your challenges, and just ask it how it can help you. That's all you need to do. And it will tell you. And I'm telling you, once you do that, you'll be very excited about what it comes up with, and you'll actually follow your nose from there. So that would be my top tips for 2026.
That's great. It's getting the AOL online CD and inserting it into the ROM and doing your first actual like search online, Yahoo search it probably was back then, and then realizing what comes next. And it's that, I think, times whatever, 100,000, like it's exponential growth. Tony, do you ever follow just any futurists on this? I follow a guy named Raymond Kurzweil. Have you ever seen him speak before?
I haven't heard of him, but I do a little bit of reading and listening for sure.
Where the human brain, what you're speaking to and where it's even faster than the automobile taking over the horse is exponential growth. And we're in a time and a period right now where this is about to get insane. So I've done a bit of research on this. 2027 are the projections for AGI, it's called, artificial general intelligence. And that's when it starts to become smarter than the human brain and most brains on the planet. We're 2 years away from that. And it's hard to see it because it's double folding. I think it was every 18 months under Moore's law. I think it's now every 6 months. Yeah. It's moving really fast.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And when you double fold, you don't just double fold all the progress last year. You double fold all the progress in human history every 6 to 18 months. And that's what we're on the precipice of. It's unreal.
And I mean, I don't know if you've used Replit, the app builder, but you can basically, there's an app that you can tell to build other apps for you, and you just type in it uses natural language. So you can tell it, please build an app to help me analyze the profitability of my jobs, and it will do it for you. Do all the coding. You don't even have to know how to code. That's insane, right? So opportunities are massive, but definitely jump on ChatGPT and ask, and don't stress about it. Because I tend to stress about this stuff a bit. So my wife is like, just calm down, just keep breathing, you'll be fine. But it's super exciting as well.
There are things we're in control of and there are things that are not. And this is certainly one of them that we're not. And you know what? The Industrial Revolution happened. The Agricultural Revolution happened. The technology, you know, computer, internet revolution happened. This is another one. We are on the precipice of it. So we will see. I don't know if I'm positive or negative about it either, but I know that in business, I see the opportunity. And for the sake of humanity, I don't know. I don't actually know if I'm stoked. I'm more just like, it's coming. So let's get ready, boys.
No one knows. And I think you said, Danny, something there, which is very powerful. And we find it just with life and coaching in general is when things are tough, you just have to focus on what you can control. And I've had, I'm sure you've had this with members, that conversation literally thousands of times when everything's burning down, it's like, there are some things you can control here. What can you do today to make your life better? And that's a key, you know, that's a key element to success and also happy living as well. So I thought that was a little gold nugget you dropped there.
Sorry, that's good. Tony, that was awesome. Thank you. And
yeah, so
coming
good,
from
man.
Across the globe, we're wearing the same t-shirt, different logos. I That's love right. and appreciate what you're doing in the market. I'm sure, you know, you're making a ton of impact, as I know we are. We've got so crazy, man.
Likewise.
Similar size teams, similar, like it's just, it's neat to have met you. And so yeah. Thanks for being on with us. And any final message or thoughts?
No, I just appreciate the opportunity to share about, you know, things that I'm passionate about and you're passionate about. And hopefully this has helped some people, open up some doors, or maybe just shed a little bit of light. That's going to give you some inspiration to push on and really crush in your business to get the life and the business, you know, that you deserve.
Let's go get it, buddy. Okay.
All right, man.
Talk to you later,
Take
Tony.
Take good care.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.